Detective Thomas Moore disliked the smell of latex, and as he snapped on the gloves, releasing a puff of talcum, he felt the usual twinge of anticipatory nausea. The odor was linked to the most unpleasant aspects of his job, and like one of Pavlov's dogs trained to salivate on cue, he'd come to associate that rubbery scent with the inevitable accompaniment of blood and body fluids, an olfactory warning to brace himself. And so he did, as he stood outside the autopsy room. He had walked in straight from the heat, and already sweat was chilling on his skin. It was July 12th, a humid and hazy Friday afternoon. Across the city of Boston, air conditioners rattled and dripped, and tempers were flaring. On the Tobin Bridge, cars would already be backed up, fleeing north to the cool forests of Maine. But Moore would not be among them. He had been called back from his vacation to view a horror he had no wish to confront. He was already garbed in a surgical gown which he'd pulled from the morgue linen cart. Now he put on a paper cap to catch stray hairs and pulled paper booties over his shoes because he had seen what sometimes spilled from the table onto the floor. The blood, the clumps of tissue. He was by no means a tidy man, but he had no wish to bring any trace of the autopsy room home on his shoes. He paused for a few seconds outside the door and took a deep breath. Then, resigning himself to the ordeal, he pushed into the room. The draped corpse lay on the table, a woman by the shape of it. Moore avoided looking too long at the victim and focused instead on the living people in the room. Dr. Ashford Tierney, the medical examiner, and a morgue attendant were assembling instruments on a tray. Across the table from Moore stood Jane Rizzoli, also from the Boston Homicide Unit. 33 years old, Rizzoli was a small and square-jawed woman. Her untamable curls were hidden beneath the paper OR cap, and without her black hair to soften her features, her face seemed to be all hard angles, her dark eyes probing and intense. She had transferred to homicide from vice and narcotics 6 months ago. She was the only woman in the homicide unit, and already there had been problems between her and another detective, charges of sexual harassment, countercharges of unrelenting bitchiness. Moore was not sure he liked Rizzoli, or she him. So far, they had kept their interactions strictly business, and he thought she preferred it that way. Standing beside Rizzoli was her partner, Barry Frost, a relentlessly cheerful cop whose bland and beardless face made him seem much younger than his 30 years. Frost had worked with Rizzoli for 2 months now without complaint, the only man in the unit placid enough to endure her foul moods. As Moore approached the table, Rizzoli said, "We wondered when you'd show up." "I was on the main turnpike when you beeped me. We've been waiting here since 5. And I'm just starting the internal exam," Dr. Tierney said, "so I'd say Detective Moore got here right on time." One man coming to the defense of another. He slammed the cabinet door shut, setting off a reverberating clang. It was one of the rare occasions he allowed his irritation to show. Dr. Tierney was a native Georgian, a courtly gentleman who believed ladies should behave like ladies. He did not enjoy working with the prickly Jane Rizzoli. The morgue attendant wheeled a tray of instruments to the table, and his gaze briefly met Moore's with a look of, "Can you believe this bitch?" "Sorry about your fishing trip," Tierney said to Moore. "It looks like your vacation's canceled." "You're sure it's our boy again?" In answer, Tierney reached for the drape and pulled it back, revealing the corpse. "Her name is Elena Ortiz." Though Moore had been braced for this sight, his first glimpse of the victim had the impact of a physical blow. The woman's black hair, matted stiff with blood, stuck out like porcupine quills from a face the color of blue-veined marble. Her lips were parted as though frozen in mid-utterance. The blood had already been washed off the body, and her wounds gaped in purplish rents on the gray canvas of skin. There were two visible wounds. One was a deep slash across the throat, extending from beneath the left ear, transecting the left carotid artery, and laying open the laryngeal cartilage, the coup de grace.